thing that everybody agrees on is that pornography is. It's like anything that you might eat or drink. It's not wholesome enough to make you live healthily in your life, but it can satisfy a craving or an itch in the moment. So you have to recognize, is this how I want to live my life? And then you have to make choices from there.
Hey, yo, busy brain. Welcome to my podcast. I am Camden Haynesworth, ADHD advocate, coach, and member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Understanding my own ADHD diagnosis completely changed the course of my life for the better. Now it is my mission and joy to provide you with the tools to do the same. Join me weekly. Let's create real results that work with your neurodivergence and reflect a confident life of self-acceptance, growth, and satisfaction. Welcome to the Busy Brain Saint podcast. Let's get growing. Hello, you made it. I am so happy that you are here. My brain is busy and my heart is full. Today, we have another special episode interview titled Navigating Unwanted Porn Use with an ADHD Brain. Today, Zach Spafford and I are talking about the impact that ADHD has on pornography viewing and use, specifically for that use that is undesired and unwanted. Zach and Darcy both have ADHD, and they are the hosts of the Thrive Beyond Pornography podcast. You can also find them on Instagram at Thrive Beyond Pornography, but the N is changed to an X. As we know, our brain is interest-seeking. With ADHD, we often cover unwanted and undesirable feelings and emotions and thoughts with things that will temporarily alleviate that pain or that discomfort. Pornography use, overeating, over gaming, scrolling endlessly on our phone, all fall within that context. And so my conversation today with Zach being very specific to pornography, which is often socially taboo as well as religiously taboo for many people, is a really important conversation. I hope that you glean what you need to from it. And of course, if you want more context and understanding about this subject, go check, take a look at Zach and Darcy and all the beautiful things that they are accomplishing over at Thrive Beyond Pornography. So let's get into it. Well, Zach, it's so nice to meet you. And I'm excited for us to get to know each other as we explore the intersectionality between ADHD and pornography use. And I guess for your listeners, I'm Camden.
Hi, Camden. Yeah, thanks for having us and welcome. I'm excited to share this content with my listeners because I think that ADHD and pornography use, I think they are a very common thing that go together. I know for me, so I'm ADHD. If you want to talk about all of the different kinds of ADHD drugs, Darcy and I, we have run the gamut because we both are ADHD and we have children who are ADHD. And so we, like, I sometimes say that Darcy's a drug rep because she knows more about a lot of these things than.
Yeah, you do have to know the ins and outs for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about this because I think this is going to be, I think, eye-opening for some of these people who maybe they've got a little bit of ADHD and they're not sure why they're operating in this realm. And maybe they've got a little bit of pornography use and they're not sure how this is impacted by their ADHD. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Excellent. So background, I am not a pornography specialist. Zach, that's kind of your wheelhouse, as you pointed out. Will you just remind us a little bit about your profession and what you do as a coach?
Yeah, so we run a podcast called Thrive Beyond Pornography, and we have a website called Get to Thrive. And Darcy and I have been working with individuals and couples for the past, well, since 2019, August of 2019. So we started right at the beginning of the pandemic.
It's probably a really good time, actually.
Yeah, it was a great time. Perfect time to start a business. And we have been working with individuals and couples to help them eliminate their pornography struggles. So whether that is simply just dealing with the behavior or dealing with the fallout from the behavior, we work holistically to get that couple to and that individual to a place where they're not just managing a problem, but they are really thriving, where it stops being problematic in their life altogether. And it's really been a fun journey because this is us taking all of the learning that we had for the, you know, the previous 15, 16 years and putting them into play with people so that they can go with somebody who's been to the top of the mountain. Darcy and I have done this work. It's not just theoretical for us. It's not a story that we are sharing that is drawing people in. It is our actual real lived experience that we get to work with people and we bring in scientific method and we bring in good coaching and we help people see their minds and start to put porn in a place that is no longer so damaging and just sticky in their lives.
Cool. Yeah, it reminds me of Band-Aid solutions versus long-term solutions. I talk about a lot with ADHD coaching.
Yes.
And that is a little bit more of my side of this coin, this conversation. But you obviously have that. And I was sharing with you that I've had obviously clients who have also had this habit and struggle. And so I talk about getting down to the root of the cause. And so I think that this is going to be a really interesting and impactful conversation as we dive into how the ADHD brain is already out of box programming set up.
Yeah.
And why then pornography becomes so, enticing for a lot of people with ADHD. So maybe we start there. If we could maybe just list out, I have a short list of like executive functions that might be beneficial. So ADHD is not very well named.
Yeah.
It's not really an attention deficit. It's that our mind doesn't regulate our attention very well. And so it doesn't stay on one thing for the neurotypical amount of time. It's often, like I like to say, ping pong brain type of idea, but not just that. Regulation of emotions, regulation of time, dysregulation of pretty much anything that the prefrontal cortex is in charge of, which is getting things done. And when we don't know how to navigate our emotions, when we have struggles with executive function, it really, we look for Band-Aids approaches. We look for things to cover up what we don't know how to deal with. And so getting down to the actual reason as to what emotion needs the most attention has been really beneficial for a lot of my clients with ADHD, for any of their bad habits or habits that aren't serving them long term. Would you add anything to that, Zach?
When it comes to pornography, I say that there's a 5-step process towards choosing porn. Step number one is a story, usually a negative story, like I don't have enough friends, or I'm overwhelmed with my work or something like that. And then there's a negative emotion usually associated with that. And that negative emotion is the thing that my clients are usually trying to avoid. Mm-hmm. And I think, especially for me as an ADHD person, as I was growing up in this framework of like, you need to be better at everything and you kind of stink at everything. Like I didn't have medication. I didn't have a diagnosis or any of that until I was in college. And that literally changed my life, like being able to study all of a sudden. Like I was a very poor student with very high intelligence. Like I got a 26 on the ACT, which I think you only need to get to like a 19 to get into a NCAA school.
Wow.
And I took it one time when I was a sophomore, but I was a straight C minus student.
Wow.
I was always like verging on the precipice of literally not being able to play any of my extracurricular sports. So I was constantly in this negative feedback loop of I suck because I can't do the things that I'm supposed to do.
Or in the way that people say I'm supposed to do them.
So that story of I suck and then that feeling of overwhelm would often trigger or create what I call the escape or the truth, right? So the escape is, hey, let's just go do something that isn't the thing that we're supposed to be doing. And it's also not dealing with this negative feeling and it's not dealing with that story. It's let's go escape into something. So for a lot of my clients, it's, oh, you know, you deserve to relax or you deserve a break or whatever it is. And then there's this justification. I'll just scroll Instagram, that place where I'm getting all the dopamine, that place where I'm getting all the fun things. And for those who struggle with pornography use, that generally is that's the launch of a habit into viewing pornography, right? So it's, as I'm scrolling, I get more aroused, there's more dopamine, there's more interest. And then finally, there's the lie, which is for those who their value structure goes against pornography use, that lie is, well, you know, I'm giving up. I just might as well dive in. I might as well be all the way in there. And I think as an ADHD person, learning how to notice that emotion up front and say, okay, there's something wrong here. I have to figure what is wrong here so that I can deal with that directly. Then dealing with that directly, my brain stops offering me porn because it's like, I don't have to escape this anymore. And that's really where everything starts to click for most of my clients.
Yeah, I love that. We so often fall into black and white thinking, these extremes of all or nothing with ADHD. It's that dysregulation once again, that for so many people with ADHD is the default. And right. Exactly what you just said, I literally was talking to the client today. I talked about starting to notice and then plant red flags,
yeah.
Right? So we notice the trigger, we plant the red flag, and then we don't expect our prefrontal cortex to do the work subconsciously for us that maybe other people might have strengths in, particularly yeah. Neurotypical. Not that everyone with ADHD that doesn't have ADHD doesn't have bad habits, but that we start to see where we are challenged and weak. We plant that red flag, and then we create something external that aligns with our goals when we're in a more stable state of mind, when we're not so emotionally charged or distracted.
Up next, we're going to learn how to use our ADHD procrastination to help us overcome unwanted habits such as pornography. We'll be right back. Living with ADHD can be a daily challenge, but there's hope. I'd like to introduce you to Mindful, my ADHD group coaching program, a lifeline for those navigating the complexities of ADHD. At Mindful, we provide you with valuable tools to manage ADHD symptoms, emotional support and understanding, and a non-judgmental community that gets what you're going through. We focus on enhancing your self-awareness, developing coping strategies, and nurturing your emotional well-being. Join a diverse, open-minded group of ADHD adults where you're never alone on this journey. Mindful is here to support you. Visit CamdenADHDCoaching.com/mindful today to start your path toward a more mindful life.
Yeah, one of the things that I use often is procrastination. I know that might be a dirty word amongst us ADHD people, but procrastination is actually one of the most effective things that you can do with pornography is to take it and say, yes, I can totally do this, right? So not taking away my agency, not taking away my capacity to choose, because I don't want to fight with my brain. I don't want to say
right.
No. Not because no is not really where I want to be, but because no triggers in our brains the fight, right? Because when you tell your brain no, it's like a toddler. It's like, but why?
Yeah.
And it doesn't want to leave that conversation. It's like, you haven't resolved this. So we say, yeah, I can totally watch all the porn I want. I'll do it later. Which is, I use that phrase all the time to do my homework and it never got me anywhere good. And now I can use procrastination for something that helps me live my values more thoroughly, which I love. And it helps me not deal with the fight in the brain. And I think that that's, as an ADHD person myself, I'm constantly fighting with my brain. And being able to step back from that and say, yep, I'm a grown up. I can totally choose this. I know that it's not where I want to be, but I have that capacity. Maybe I'll do it later. And just let that go and not fight with it and not get into that trench that I think a lot of people talk about, the white knuckling phase.
Yeah.
Leaving porn behind.
It, once again, it is a band-aid approach with the white knuckling, but it also is expending so much energy to have that racing brain and fight with your brain that really could be put toward so many greater things in our life. And cognitively, we know that, but I am like absolutely astounded by your hack of procrastination right now. I think that's so genius. Yeah. I also talk with my clients about still creating agency and making sure that the way that they're talking to themselves isn't scarcity. And I was just looking up PDA, pathological demand avoidance. That a lot of the time, neurodivergence, when people talk to us or we talk to ourselves in a way that doesn't create autonomy, doesn't create like the feeling of I'm in charge of my life, even when we want to do the thing, we do the opposite, just like you're saying with this toddler brain, right?
You literally just explained like all of my life right there, because I'm that guy who's like, well, why should I do that?
Yeah,
exactly. You want me to do something, and if I don't have a good reason behind doing it, I won't do it. That's, I mean, just take all of my homework for all of the years that I was in high school and they would be like, you got to turn this paper in. And I'm like, I haven't learned anything from it. Why would I turn this in? It doesn't matter to me. And I think that that's a really good, like Darcy would tell you, like I'm that guy, my wife, Darcy would tell you that I'm that guy who's like, I'm not going to do that just because you tell me to.
Right.
I've always been that guy. And so you're literally revealing to my own mind.
Good. Well, good. Let that be a witness of this incredible ADHD brain we have, that
It does matter how we speak to ourselves and the subconscious and the conscious mind and the moral mind versus the mind that doesn't care so much about morality. Like, they're all there conversing. And the way that we talk to each other does matter. My daughter also has ADHD, and we're really working on this one because, like you and me to a degree, there are certain ways that we request things of her that will get complete backlash. Yeah. We have found that just by changing the first question word from go get, do that thing, and instead we're saying, would you go do that thing? Would you please go get your pajamas on? Oh, sure. And then as a follow-up, how would you feel about that? Would you please go do that? And she somehow has buy-in. And my husband and I, we've only been doing this the past week, but like, we wink at each other and we're like, and so I think of our brain.
Yeah.
And if we knew that, if we knew how we needed to speak to ourselves, not in like a, in like a deceiving kind of way, but in the way of like, we know our language, we know ourselves as a person, and we're being kind to ourselves by talking to ourselves kindly. In this perspective, I'm just really curious about how that might work.
One thing that I'm hearing in this is agency, right? So agency, right, or free choice or free will. So to have agency or free choice or free will, you have to have three things. You have to have a knowledge of what's right and wrong. You have to have a capacity to choose between the things, right? So you have to be able to say both yes and no, and you have to have consequences. Mm. The thing where we fail most of the time with, and what it sounds like with our children in ADHD and with me with ADHD, is in the yes or no, right? Like, go do this. That's a demand. It's not a, you can choose what to do. And the way that you're phrasing this, that really clearly defines, it's like, okay, you can choose. You know what the good thing to do is, or you know what the thing that you really want to do is in this space, but I'm actually honoring your capacity to choose. And where we fail at this, when it comes to pornography, is in that capacity to choose, to be able to say both yes and no, right? And so I'm someone who doesn't drink. My religious background, I don't drink. If somebody came up to me and said, hey, do you want a beer? I would say to them, no, thank you. And if they pressed me, right, and they said, hey, oh, that's right, you can't drink, I would say, I can, but I choose not to.
Yeah.
And that framework is one where I'm fully invested in my agency, in my capacity to choose. But when we think about porn, we often think that's an absolute no, never.
Right.
You're going to destroy your life. You're going to destroy everything about your life. We take it to this very black, dark place. And then we say, if you ever do it, that's the end of the world. And there's no coming back from it. But in reality, what is more true is I can view all the porn I want. What do I choose? What helps me move towards my values? And I think that principle that you just described, where you're saying, would you do this, or will you please, or how do you feel about doing this? That really is that curiosity to get into the heart of the question of like, well, where do I want to be? Do I want to be exiting my value structure and moving towards pornography and escaping my feelings and escaping who I am? Or do I want to move more towards my values and really own this decision and be, and own the decision either way, but really be someone who's saying, I'm not being acted upon. This isn't something that is coming at me. It's something I'm choosing. How do I want to choose about it?
Cool. That was awesome. So what would you say in terms of like parents or church leaders or community leaders or whoever might be talking to another person about pornography to help them recognize this principle? I think that there's so much fear surrounding this, sex in general, I think. Yeah. But there's so much fear, like you were just highlighting, like, if you do this, it's done for, you know? And and then honestly, for an ADHD brain, you know what that does? It creates this level of curiosity and novelty and all these things actually increase our dopamine and make us want to go do the thing when we're not supposed to. So talk to me about that. I'd love to hear your perspective more on that part.
One of the things that I believe is that because we are here, right? So we've been given this thing, this free agency, this choice, this however you think about it in your own faith journey or in your own tradition of thinking about humans, right? We've been given this capacity to choose. And the most difficult part about that is that because we've been given the capacity to choose, so has everybody else. And that really, that's the worst, right? Because it's like, you got your children, and you're like, don't do that. And then they choose, and you're like, dang it, right? Yeah. And we want to be able to take that from people. And the way that we do that is we try to manipulate them. And I'm not saying that we're trying in a malicious way. I think generally speaking, what we're doing is we're saying, let me make sure you understand how bad this is. Let me make sure you are clear about the consequences of this. But the truth is, the more we push on that button, I mean, we do this with food too, right? Sugar's bad. And the more we push on that button, that we don't get a better result. All we do is create this antagonistic reality. It's such an interesting idea to let people do what it is they want to choose.
Well, I was with my mom the other day, I don't know, a couple months ago, and the subject of drugs actually came up with my kids. And I was talking about, my kids were asking, why do people even participate in drugs? And I was like, well, it makes them feel really good. And I was getting very detailed about the impact of drugs on the brain and on the body and what they experience. And that's why it becomes so enticing and everything that goes with that. And before I could quite get to the end of that, my mom jumped in and said, and it destroys their life. And I love my mom. She's amazing. She really is. But it is this different focus, right? With it destroys your life. It's just going to take away all of your choices, take away all of your agency. And it's not wrong, but it's also not the complete picture. My kids need to understand that, in my opinion, that it is enticing and that our body is actually responding for a purpose in the way that it is. And it could go even further with pornography and communication and intimacy. And that the only solution isn't just to talk about the negative consequences.
Right.
And I think the full picture, it does. It allows them to choose. And that feels like,
it's scary.
Am I actually doing the best job?
What if they do choose it?
Yeah.
But I think you're exactly right in that when we only detail the negatives, the thing that everybody agrees on is that pornography is.
Yeah.
And so detailing it as good or bad doesn't necessarily help someone make a decision, especially if we work to negate the other side. So let me just give you a for instance, right? So if somebody's like, porn's so bad and it's going to destroy your life. And then a kid comes across pornography and they're like, this is so interesting. This feels good. It makes me feel good. Why is it so bad? We haven't really done a good job of giving that child a framework to operate under. We've simply said, this is bad, don't do it. And then they have no idea why it's bad because they're seeing it with their own eyes going, how can this be bad? And that's a problem because we've been, where do they go from there? And that's why I think it's important to be as clear as you can. Like when we talk to our kids about pornography, we say things like, it's probably going to be interesting to you. You're probably going to like it. It's sexuality, and sexuality is a part of human development, and you're probably going to see it and enjoy it. It is not reality. It's usually false. It's usually not real people doing what real intimate acts look like. It's more like performance. So you have to understand that part of this is just designed to cheetify sexuality, make it into a Cheetos version of sexuality.
Puffed and orange.
Right. And that's not a problem per se, but what you have to recognize is that it's like anything that you might eat or drink. It's not wholesome enough to make you live healthfully in your life, but it can satisfy a craving or an itch in the moment. So you have to recognize, is this how I want to live my life? And then you have to make choices from there. That's a whole different framework. I think it's a much more holistic framework. I think it's a much more valued framework, especially as people grow, because we can't all just follow the rules. And it takes work.
And for the people who are teaching,
it takes
vulnerability.
To not jump in and solve the problem and be vulnerable about what might be happening. That's tough.
Totally.
That's really difficult, I think, in most frameworks. In most religious people's lives, I think that's very difficult.
Yeah, I agree. I will say that growing up, my mom did a really good job about talking about my body, my physical body and the autonomy and what my body represented and how good it was and all the parts. So I grew up with great body understanding and image of just me as a divine person and as an important person, a worthy person. And then when I would hear principles like this, like what you're teaching over time, just picking them up, it resonated with the foundation that my mom did give me. And so I'm grateful for her. I'm grateful that I at least was given that as a millennial, because not everyone was. I am curious though, when we're talking about impulsivity in particular, And with going back to ADHD and this impulsive nature, this babysitter, like I say, that's out to lunch in our prefrontal cortex, right. That usually says, pause, right? Let's think this through. But this is all happening subconsciously in a neurotypical brain. Ours is out to lunch, and learning how to create the pause and then what happens in the pause to make a choice from there. You've given us one option here with procrastination, and we've talked about talking to ourselves well. But anything you'd have to say about that like impulsive nature to like just jump into things?
So I think one of the things that we're often taught is that you got to use willpower and motivation to conquer these negative habits. So, you know, whether that negative habit is overeating or picking up your phone and scrolling, doom scrolling or viewing pornography, we've been taught motivation and willpower are the tools. And unfortunately, the truth is that motivation and willpower do basically nothing in this arena except for make you more frustrated. There's actually a Bible story that I don't usually talk about the Bible much, but there's a Bible story that illustrates this fairly well. So there's Potiphar's wife and a guy named Joseph. And in Joseph in Egypt, he's like hanging out, doing all the things, running Potiphar's house. And Potiphar's wife is like, hey, Joe, let's do the deed. And Joseph leaves, right? That's the famous, I think Donny Osmond did the Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, right? And
yep,
leaves. And my mom said that he was wearing very colorful boxers, right? So he's running away. And he leaves his clothes in this woman's hands, right? That's often what we're told to do. That's often what we think can happen with these temptations or these ideas or these offerings from our brain to engage in impulsive activities, is that if I just run far enough, fast enough, then I'll get there. But the problem is that your brain can never run away from itself. And so we have motivation and willpower. They're external tools for external problems.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Potiphar's wife was an external problem that you could physically move away from, and you can get far enough away that she can never be a problem ever again. But your brain is always with you. So we have to learn to work with our brain in a more meaningful way. So we have to start by asking, well, what does our brain use that's internal? Habits are an internal. So our brain does three things. Our lower brain does three things. It seeks pleasure, avoids pain, and conserves energy. Mm-hmm. So we have to figure out which of these can help us actually solve for this impulsivity. And the one that most often can help us is conserve energy, which means we have to create new habits. And new habits are the way to deal with the impulsivity that our brain is offering us. And it's not easy because you have to create a habit of observing your brain. And most of us think our brain just runs and we don't need to do anything about it. But being able to use the innate capacity that humans have of stepping back from our brains and observing it meaningfully can help us create a space to do this. And once we create that habit, it will become automatic. It will become this automatic injection into the impulsivity. So anytime you feel yourself getting driven towards this impulse, it's like, oh, wait, what's happening?
Yeah.
Just get curious as you can. The more curious you can be about your brain, the more likely you'll be able to observe the details, understand the data, and then resolve the issue, which I think ADD people are really good about that, right? Because we're really
the
good
problem solvers. Yeah.
And the more we can see it as a tool and a data problem rather than a moral failing, the more likely we are to be able to, one, address it, and two, not feel horrible about it all the time, which would keep it in a downward spiral. So how do you do that? The truth is you can't just do it. You have to practice. I tell people all the time, right? Like, you think Michael Jordan, I think he's the greatest basketball player of all time. Because he wasn't practicing, he was always practicing.
Yeah.
Think about free throws. When do you practice free throws? It's not in the game. It's before the game. It's before practice. It's after practice. It's during practice. Every chance you get, so that it becomes automatic. And that's really what you have to do, is you have to be willing to, in your best moments, say, I'm going to practice this tool, not wait for game time. Because game time is when your brain offers you the impulse. You have to practice in your best moment.
It's not the best brain and the impulse. It's not the best brain to operate. You got to show up for your future self.
Right. Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And that's I get it. I always tell people, listen, I'm not selling you something that's easy. I'm selling you the right thing. We're working on solving for the problem. I'm not going to come in here with magic. You have to do this work. It's going to be tough.
Interested in long-term solutions. Yeah. Deep solutions here. I get so excited Okay. So I don't know if it's the same with you, but with my clientele, the people I work with, they start out the first couple weeks or sessions with me and they're like, what is this? Like, they're open and curious. But this whole idea that you've just laid beautifully out that I don't need to repeat of noticing your own brain, noticing your thoughts, noticing your triggers and how you respond and your emotions, all of that is very, very foreign. We don't learn this throughout high school or whenever. Most adults don't really learn how to do this. And yet I start to get so excited when my clients either come to Marco Polo with me or on our sessions together and they're like, I was noticing something that was happening in my brain. I was noticing how distracted I was getting or how sad I was feeling, or, wow, I really try and pack too much into my schedule and that causes anxiety. When they start to talk about themselves with that kind of observation, I'm like, all right, we're going to be okay. Because that initial step, that skill, like you're explaining, is such a catapult. It is such a springboard to sparking the rest of the path. That is like one of the biggest first steps that someone has to learn. And I love that we're talking so much about this. It's not that that's the solution, but man, is it a beautiful first flag on your trail.
It gives you a groundwork to now start operating from.
Right.
Because if I can see it before it happens, which I think the ADHD brain is not very good at seeing things before they happen.
No, in fact, it's one of the executive functions that were completely dysfunctional. And it's part of working memory. And what was the other one? I have it up right here. Self-reflection and evaluation is actually an executive function. We do not reflect or self-evaluate naturally.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. And once I can start learning that skill and practicing that skill, I do this with my own children. I spent a number of years in the business world. I had to learn the hard way how to operate in that environment so that I wasn't just blurting out things in the middle of meetings. I know that sounds a bit silly for a grown man to say, but I really did have to learn that as a skill.
Not for me. This is who I work with all day long. Right. It's very normal. Yeah.
And once I could start to see, okay, I'm thinking 5 steps ahead right now, even though it's not natural to me. I literally have to pull back and go, when my brain says, hey, do you want to say this? I literally have to pull back and say, what is the 5 steps down the road that's going to happen if I say that? And I teach that to my own children. It's like, okay, what are you trying to accomplish with what you're saying right now? Because my kid, they'll get into an argument and they'll just say the meanest thing that they can. And I'm like, okay, or something that's irrelevant, but they think absolves them of any responsibility. And I say, okay, but what do you try to convey with that? Because I'm not sure that it's conveying the thing you want it to convey. And once we can start to observe our brain, and once we can really be like, okay, what are the 5 steps ahead of me, right? If I view porn, right now I'm feeling overwhelmed. And my next step is to go look at porn. And the step after that is to tell my spouse or feel guilty or feel ashamed of myself. And the next step after that is to ruminate on it for the next 3 weeks. Maybe I should reevaluate viewing pornography and see about this feeling of overwhelm I'm struggling with.
And how quickly do you feel like you've been able to do that? Like now in life versus maybe the very beginning of your getting to know this process?
Yeah. So I love to tell this story. So there are 10 of us, plus we actually have renters. So at any given time, there are about 12 people living in our house.
Wow.
But we rent out about a third of our basement. And then I have 8 children. Darcy and I have 8 children. There was this moment about 2 years ago where everybody was gone. I was seeing my wife off at the door and I was like, all right, I'll see you later. And my brain was like, hey, you're all alone. Let's go watch porn.
Totally.
And I literally laughed out loud. If I'd have had a Ring camera, you'd have seen me laughing for no good reason because it was like me and nothing.
That's hilarious.
And it has become over time as automatic as I can make it. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect. It doesn't always kick in. I do still say impulsive things or do impulsive things. But as I have practiced it, the more I practice it, the more automatic it becomes. And the more automatic it becomes, the less likely it is that I'm going to travel down a path that does not fit into my value stream. That's really the
cool.
And like you said, like you have to practice. If you don't practice outside of game time, then it doesn't really matter if you know the skill. This is like a surgeon who never does surgery. He doesn't know how to do it. He may have a theoretical knowledge of it, but he's not going to, I'm not letting him cut on me anyway.
No, our neural pathways are strong either way, right? So learning how to exercise them toward the goals that we actually want out of our life versus them being strong and other things that really aren't serving us, it's still, they're still both strong. And so they're going to need attention regardless. A lot of my, a lot of people with ADHD I talk with, they're always very interested in what happens after the noticing happens. I love your five steps ahead rule. And I know that a lot of people that I grew up with that had porn habits back in the white knuckling days, it was like, all right, I'm going to the gym. Yeah. All right, I'm doing other things. I'm filling that time with something else. And I'm wondering if there might be a combination of things, of filling it with something good, but not as a, like a running away, but as a productive movement forward, productive momentum in a different direction. I, once again, I'm not a an expert on this. And so I'd love your perspective when it comes to pornography viewing.
Well, you're hitting the nail on the head by saying not in a runaway kind of way.
Yeah.
The problem with the way that I think most of us grew up with, you take like a 12-step program, those ideas are very much about hold on to it. I know they would say don't white knuckle, but they're not really helping you see clearly how to move towards your values. So acceptance and commitment training or acceptance and commitment therapy. So I took a course by Russ Harris, but he really lays out this really clear, like when you get to a choice point, you can move away from your values or towards your values. If there's anxiety there and you're running from the choice in some way, it's going to continue to come up. This is that white bear, pink elephant experiment that you may have heard of in your psych 101 class in college. But essentially what it is, if we are told not to think about something, so let's say my brain says, hey, let's do porn or let's do video games or whatever it is, right? And we fight with that. We suppress it. We're like, I can't, not right now. It's not time. Or I don't want to. It's against my values. All that anxiety that we put into it, these white bear, pink elephant experiments have shown us that what that does is it actually makes your brain obsess over the problem. So that negative feeling entrenches the problem. And unless and until we can address that negative feeling and lower the temperature on that negativity, it's going to keep coming up because our brain's like, this is not solved. This is not, this is still here. And rather than obsessing over it, if we can just get grounded and centered, so mindfulness techniques are really helpful for this. I like to do a 1 minute check-in, which is just check in with your toes and you move, you know, from body part to body part, taking deep breaths as you go from your toes to the top of your head and just connecting with reality and saying, I'm okay, I'm here and I'm fine. And then once I've got that grounded, centered feeling, I can then move towards my value without running from something that that my brain is offering me.
I so love even that. If the out of the fight the and flight. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you, even if the choice is the same, right? If it's, I want to go to the gym because that's towards my values. No matter what that choice is, we may not change the actual behavior, but the feeling behind it that we change, that's where this, the rubber meets the road on this.
Because
you're
fuel.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. What's going to fuel the action? Is it that we're afraid and anxious, or is it that we've grounded? We remember we have a body. I talk about out of your head into your body, right? We remember like, oh, I actually am okay with feeling anxious. This is just anxiety. I'm still okay. I'm alive. Yeah. Or I'm okay to feel a little lonely. That feels sad. There's nothing wrong with sad. I don't need to fix that. But now that I'm there and I know that I'm okay, what do I choose to do next? Yeah, that's so
you're
important.
Exactly right. Most people don't realize that most feelings last only about 90 seconds.
Wow.
So if you think about it, you could probably handle almost anything for 90 seconds.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then I can actually just calm down about whatever it is. And for most men, we have been taught very specifically, rub some dirt on it, walk it off, get out there and play, right? That's what we've been told. And that is a, that's the problem there is that if we don't have a good way of acknowledging and recognizing our feelings, because we have been so often asked to avoid or control or suppress them, part of this whole process becomes one of what are my feelings? Do I have them?
Intelligence, like this whole new.
I don't have feelings.
Yeah, this emotional intelligence, it's a whole new skill set. It really is. And man, that's a whole nother podcast, isn't it?
Right. Oh, yeah, totally. But I think for most men, if we can recognize that feelings are data points rather than problems, then we can integrate them more easily. I always joke, men are only supposed to have three different feelings: hungry, angry, and horny. Those are the only three feelings that men are allowed. But there's so much more there.
Societal.
And if we can see them, we can use them to help us actually function more effectively.
Oh my gosh, it's night and day. I mean, as a woman that had a whole spectrum, as an ADHD woman that had a whole spectrum of emotions, actually being able to name them and identify them and understand their triggers and understand what that's connected to from the past and all of that has, I've written a whole nother book for my life and my future, understanding who I am so much more. And similar to maybe out of box programming men, generally speaking, with ADHD, it does feel, my husband and I kind of giggle because it's often a role reversal in our home. He is very neurotypical. And so you'll see the reels and the TikToks of my husband didn't blah, 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 blah. I'm like, that's me. It's always me. It's a role reversal. Right. And so just to understand my brain and how it works, I've had to have these external structures and systems in place where I know my brain doesn't show up. And I feel like that's like the major theme here that we've been talking about all along is when you can't rely upon your brain necessarily to be the one tool to help you achieve your dreams, then what? And what I hear you saying over and over again is drop into your body, figure out number one, what do you want when you're in a good space? And then create some kind of structure, five steps ahead, whatever it might be, so that you can tap into that. So when you notice that those red flags are coming up, you can tap into that and be more successful moving toward that. And ADHDers, we can always benefit from creating external structure.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly it. It's this idea that we can build it. I mean, ADHDers, I have always felt if I can't buy it, I can build it.
Yeah, I love that. I'm a massive DIYer in my house. I'm loving your
backdrop. This wall behind me, I built that.
Yeah, I
physically built the wall and then I made it pretty.
I love that.
I built that wall over there. This office didn't exist when we bought this house, right?
Yeah, and that's awesome.
The fact that if you can, as an ADHDer, say, hey, there's this new way of doing things and I can build it into my internal capacities so that I don't have to feel discouraged and overwhelmed and always behind, you're going to start to see the fruits of that. And you're going to say, I don't have to escape as much. I don't have to run away from this garbage feeling that I feel all the time as much. And I think that really is a valuable structure for most people.
Yeah. I love to say you kick the ADHD out of the driver's seat and you take the reins, right? That it truly does put the power back in your hands. And most people feel like their emotions or their brain is driving this wherever this car is going to go called life. And that's an icky feeling. So I love your end perspective there. Something that really resonates. Any last thoughts as we're ending? This has been so fun.
Yeah, I think no matter what, whether you're ADHD or you have somebody who is ADHD in your life, when it comes to the struggle of pornography, and whether there's nobody I know that doesn't have somebody that they know that's struggling with this, there's hope. This doesn't have to be the end. This doesn't have to be destructive. This doesn't have to be something that we're all afraid of. It's less of that and more of, I can actually do this if I get the right framework, if I get the right perspective, the right skill set, and the right willingness to do the work inside that skill set. You can do it. And I think anybody who wants that framework, you don't have to wait anymore. Like, I had to make it myself. You don't have to build it your own self. You can get it from somebody else now.
Awesome. And what a better way to do it than somebody who's been through it too. I think that's pretty special. That's pretty awesome. That self-mastery that doesn't require us to just pretend like none of the pain and none of the emotions exist. That I think a lot of, and I think that this is what I'm going to drive home right now toward the end is, I think a lot of neurotypical advice and coaching and hoorah, hoorah, hoorah sometimes comes across as a lot of hoorah and not a lot of digging deep and we're disappointed when it doesn't move as quickly or as excited or as fireworks and confetti as we feel like it should, when it really is a degree at a time and a quarter of a degree at a time. But what we're building is something that's so much more solid and so much more helpful over time. And it's worth the journey. It's worth those small steps.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, keep going. Keep doing the work.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Zach. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. Thank you for doing this. For those who are going to listen to this on my podcast, how can people find you?
I'm Camden Hainsworth. You can find me at CamdenADHDCoaching.com. I work with one-on-one clients as well as have a group program that's a subscription monthly. Or you can find me on Instagram at Camden_ADHD or at The Busy Brained Saint. And for you?
You can find us at gettothrive.com. And you can find us on Instagram at Thrive Beyond Pornography, where the N in pornography is an X because you can't use that word apparently on Instagram.
Nope. Awesome, Zach. Well, thank you for your time and your expertise. This has been really, really beneficial. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you. Back to you soon.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Busy Brained Saint podcast. If you're eager to explore the world of ADHD coaching, make sure to connect with me on Instagram at Camden_ADHD or visit my website, CamdenADHDCoaching.com. For more LDS-specific ADHD content, don't forget to follow this podcast and join us on Instagram at The Busy Brained Saint. Listen, I'm here to support you on your journey. I cannot wait to have you as a part of our community. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and remember, you're not alone here. Thanks for being a part of the Busy Brained Saint family.